And our speaker tonight is Kathy from Fishtown.
Hi, I'm Kathy, and I'm an alcoholic. Well, anytime I told a few people I was coming up here, or down here, wherever that is, and everyone was like, there's such a nice group of people. And I'm like, that's really exciting to be, you know, to come into a room of good energy people. And it's funny, because I felt that just coming in here, like the way you guys greet people that come in here, like that is so nice, especially for the newcomer, you know, like, thank you for having that a part of your group, because, you know, it's not easy walking through these doors. It really isn't. And so thanks for having me, and thanks for the warm welcome. And I want to thank my friends that came tonight. Dawn and Mr. Palmer and Brooklyn and Dana and Danette and Dave and Wilson and Judy and everyone else. It's just really nice, because those trips, those car rides, is how, like, it's like an intimate level, how you really get to know one another, how you get to know someone's personality, how you get to know someone's background and where they're at in their recovery, or you listening to a speaker CD. And because that's how I got sober. Like, those were the actions that I took. Those people who guided me through this process, that's what they did for me when I was brand new. They would throw me in the car and off we went, and I would listen to, like, a woman who had, like, 20 years sober talk about her drinking, and she drank just like me. I'm like, there's no way. And we had, like, the same thoughts and the same feelings, and those car rides are very precious to the alcoholic, because, you know, the conversations that take place in those car rides don't usually take place in, you know, at the home or with other friends that aren't alcoholics or at the job place. And it's just, those are the, you know, I really look forward to these types of trips. And, you know, I know today that it is my duty to continue to carry it that way, because that's how it was carried to me. So, like I said, I'm Kathy. I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date. It's April 25th, 2009. I have a sponsor. She knows that she sponsors me. I sponsor other women. They sponsor other women. And I have a home group. It's the Fishtown Breakdown. It's located at the Circle of Hope, 2009 Frankfurt Ave in the Fishtown section of Philadelphia. We meet every Sunday morning, 10 o'clock. It's a big book study. The Big Book Study originally started with women just wanting to become better sponsors and to have, you know, knowledge of the Big Book and to kind of just cross-reference with everybody, like, what, how are you doing, how are you, you know, just, it was just, like, amazing to be in a room with powerful women who have guided me and directed me. And it was in that study where I was able to, you know, maybe explain alcoholism. It's really all it is. It's not. It's just knowledge. But, you know, it keeps us here. It's our lifeline. It's our direction. It's our design for living. And that group has grown into a bigger number. And like, Dave's been there. Judy's been there. I think Kathy's been there. And it's really cool to see people. So, like, this meeting that was, like, started out with women, we had people traveling from all over to come to this meeting. And it's pretty cool. And I love my home group. And, if you don't love your home group, find a new one, you know, because it's amazing. It's just really cool to, like, be a part of a group where you're loved and people know your name. And it wasn't like that when I first got here, you know. That's the whole thing. Like, I came in with my head below, like, I didn't know what was wrong with me. And so, like, I have a job tonight, and it is to tell you what I was like, what happened, what I'm like today. And, you know, just to give a little background, like, my parents had 7 kids in 10 years, and, yeah, well, Christmases sucked, but, my parents, you know, both of my grandfathers were alcoholic, neither of them are living today, neither of them made it to AA. They were both abusive fathers, husbands, and, you know, they did the best that they could. Like, I don't know why they never made it to AA, you know, but I know this. They both had kids, you know, and my mom was the youngest. My dad was, like, the only boy, and they got together. So my mom and dad got together, two broken hearts, two broken souls, just really just trying to live life, you know, and without a higher power, without like having like proper tools from parents or this or that, they did what they thought was right. They had 7 kids in 10 years. But like my mom and my, like, you know, thank God for this process, because I love my dad today, even though like he didn't like really raise me, but I know that this process allows me to look at him and love him no matter what. And so when my parents had 7 kids, my mom had no high school diploma, my dad wasn't able to financially support us. They were pot smokers. They had, you know, we were the house where all their friends came to, and I was just really pissed at that. I was angry. I'm like, this is bullshit is what was going on in my head. I'm like, why are these outside people coming into our own home and just, like, smoking pot all the time? Like, I just, for some reason, as a little girl, I knew that that wasn't right. Like, I felt like, you know, I was just an angry. So, my mom, I guess after the 7th kid, she really just wanted to fix my dad, you know. And we can't fix people here. But, you know, we don't possess people. We can't make them do things that we want them to do, even though we want them to do things. And, you know, and I guess just, you know, like I said, after 7 kids, she just up and left. And my mom up and left. She raised us on welfare in the city of Philadelphia, and she did the best that she could with what she had. And so I basically became like the second mother. And I was telling Dave and Danette on the way up, he was like, what was that like living with, you know, 7 kids? I'm like, oh, 7. I'm like, well, my mom left my dad. We moved in with her sister who also had 7 kids. You know, yeah, because her. And so they were like the opposite. They had 5 girls and 2 boys. And so there were 14 kids, 2 moms, trying to raise kids, like, you know, on welfare in the city of Philadelphia. Because, you know, it was, I was so angry. You know, I'm like, this is not my life. This is not my family. This is not fair, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, we lived together for like 1.5 years, and my aunt finally moved on and took her kids with her, and we remained in that household. And I watched my mom. She put her life on the line for her 7 kids. She uprooted us from the house that, you know, was really not in such a great environment, and she loved us. I was not physically abused. I wasn't sexually abused. I wasn't verbally abused. But the thing is this, I was so angry already that I couldn't even feel my mother's love anyway. Like, I was already closed off. I was already pissed. And so anytime, like, when she would say, I love you, like, saying that back, it didn't feel natural to me. I was already closed off. I was just kind of like, you know, whatever. And just still, you know, angry with the surroundings of my life. I didn't have, like, the name brand sneakers. I didn't have this. I didn't have that. And my mom, like, you know, she didn't have a high school diploma, but she eventually got her diploma. She put herself through nursing school, and, like, she gets, like, Nurse of the Year awards today. I'm like, I don't know how she did that. She raised 7 kids, but she loved us unconditionally, and she still does. And she's one of my heroes. And so, like I said, like, I was angry, and our siblings together, like, we didn't know how to be brothers and sisters. We just didn't know how to. Everyone was fending for themselves constantly. Like, so there's always, like, battle, and someone was always, I fist fought every one of my brothers and sister. Like, I got a scar on my arm from fighting my sister. Like, just, you know, that's just how we coped with life. We didn't know any better. And so, you know, I always felt like, I don't know, like, a lot of people say that they didn't feel like they fit in or they didn't feel like belong. Like, I just felt like I had experienced those feelings too, but I didn't know what it was. Like, so when I went to grade school, when people would raise their hand at school, I'm like, oh, how do you do that? Like, you're going to hear your own voice out loud in front of all those people. What if you get the answer wrong? Oh, God, that's why I wouldn't raise my hand. What if the answer is wrong? Now, so, like, in my own head, and I had no idea that I was in my own head. Like, it's okay to have a wrong answer, you know. And but in my own mind, I didn't think that way. And so when I, like, my first drink was in the 6th grade. So, like I've had experiences of like relief, and like I never wanted to be home. Like I loved playing soccer. I loved just running on that soccer field. Like that's where my anger, you know, came out. I just felt free just running, and I never really liked being home. And when I was home, I hated everybody there anyway. Like that was the household. Everyone was just like, what is going on here? And so, but and I know this, like, I saw my mom, I saw her sisters, I saw my female cousins, like, get pregnant at a young age, and I remember saying to myself, I'm not going to do that. So I'm not going to live that way. And it's not to say it's good or bad, it's just that I was like, screw that, I'm getting mine. I'm going to get my material things, I'm going to get my job, I'm going to get this, I'm going to get that, and I'm going to do it all by myself. And that's the attitude that I took on. And not even, like, caring, like, what my brothers were going to go to school for, like, what type of job they had. Like, that didn't come to mind. Like, I was not a supportive sister. I didn't know how to be. And so when I, like my first drink was in sixth grade, and it was Kahlua milk, you know, stole from my friend's parents' house, you know. And then, like, I remember going to school that week and thinking, oh, I'm a tough girl now. I had alcohol over the weekend, you know. And like, I come from that Irish Catholic family where every function you got, like, the christening, the communion, the Easter, the Christmas, there's always booze around, you know, or the kids are, like, tapping the beer for the adults, like, you know, and the kids are excited to hand out the beer, you know, and that was my background, and so this is, like, by the time I hit eighth grade, I drank the night I graduated high school. I thought I was, you know, giving myself a gift, and so I did not know that I was beginning. I did not know that I had alcoholic thinking or I suffer from this disease of alcoholism, which I know to be today a disconnect from God. I know alcoholism to be a three-part disease, mentally, bodily, and spiritually. And I was suffering from a spiritual malady from an early childhood, that gaping hole in the soul, nothing's good enough, it's only a temporary fix. And I did not know that I lived life running on self-will and disconnected from God. I did not know that I was about to begin this, you know, this drinking that would soon progress me into stages of my life and took me to places that I never thought I'd be or go. Because I had this attitude of, I'm going to get mine, I made sure I did, you know. I went to high school, graduated high school. I was that weekend drinker, like hardcore. I was a weekend drinker. And when you're younger, I think you become a little resilient. You're able to get back to school and, like, do your thing and tell stories about the drunkenness over the weekend. And then you're cool, blah, blah, blah. And just all that stuff. And, like, I remember with my mom, because, like, I was telling you, she's a single parent. And I would be, like, I would babysit on the weekends. So then my house became, my friends came over at the age of 14, 15 years old. And we were the party house. And I'd have it all set up. I had my brother, like, and so I'm like 14, 15, and I go upstairs, I order a case of beer. In Philadelphia, you can actually have beer delivered to your house, which is really weird. I don't know if you can do that other places, but I would call up and order cases of beer, and I'd have my little brother, who's 3 years younger than me, so he's like, what, 11 at the time, and I'm like, John, when the beer guy comes, I want you to holler up the steps, Mom, the beer's here, and I'm going to holler down, the money's on the VCR, honey. And, like, that's how I got my alcohol on the weekends. And, yes, that brother is in here, too, because he ends up doing the same thing. Like, I showed him, you know, this is how we get our alcohol, you know. And so, like, that's, like, what my weekend life was like in high school. Like, I never – so, like, by the time I was 15 years old, I was a weekend drinker. Never missed a beat. Friday, Saturday nights, drunk. Monday, go to school. And that was how I lived my life through high school. I graduated high school. I started a full-time job right after high school. I wasn't going to college because I wanted money, because I wanted sneakers, I wanted clothes, I wanted this, I wanted that. I wanted to get everything that I couldn't get when I was little. And so – you know, and then, like, I had, so it was like a full-time job, and then eventually I became a full-time student at night. I was having college paid for, and I had all of these outside things, right? I had the car, I had the apartment, I had the clothes, I was traveling, I was, not that I remember where I traveled, I was always drunk everywhere I traveled. You know, I've been to Vegas, Key West, I, like, remember walking through. I remember, you know, like those like ice buckets that are like filled with booze, and I'm walking through like these group of people, and it was apparently an AA convention. I was like, oh my God, I feel so bad for those people. And I'm walking through with my ice bucket, and they're probably like, yeah, we'll be seeing her soon. And but like that's like what my vacations were like. I don't have pictures of, like, you know, historical things. Like, it just, I went there to get loaded. That's what I, that's how I had fun in life, you know. And so, again, like, now my disease is progressing, the strength is progressing, and I have no idea. And the thing is this, is I'm watching my girlfriends get on with life. I'm watching, I partied with them, we did other forms of alcohol together, but then I'm watching them keep relationships, and then I'm watching them get engaged, and then I'm watching them buy houses, and I'm watching them have babies, and I'm going the opposite direction, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, I couldn't, like, get life going. I tried so hard with my will to do it, and it just wouldn't, like, start. You know, and I'm going, I'm hopping from boyfriend to boyfriend, job to job, and I'm like, what is wrong with me? We drink the same, you know, but they don't get hammered on Saturday morning. They don't need to pick up a drink on Saturday morning. I do. I need that drink to get me out of bed to even live life, because I have that spiritual malady where my spirit gets so sick that alcohol became my spirit. And so this is like my drinking. I remember my mom would say, because I would get nasty hangovers on the weekends. And my mom was like, you know, you're drinking a little bit too much. Why don't you go volunteer somewhere? I'm like, sure, it sounds good, but I'm not really going to do it, you know. And so there came a point in time where, so I would have these weekend escapades. You know, money's gone. All week long I'm shopping, like, so this is what I would do on Monday morning, even if I made it to work, because I was so hungover from the weekend. Monday, I'm not drinking. I'm telling myself, Tuesday, I'm not drinking. Friday, Wednesday, I'm really not going to drink on Friday. Thursday, I swear, I'm not going out to happy hour. Like, screw that. I wasted all my money last week, and I'm not going. And then Friday comes, and all of a sudden, I'm at happy hour. After I told myself all week long, I swore to myself all week long, I am not going to go to happy hour. And then you're at happy hour. And then after happy hour, I'm going to go home after happy hour. And then I'm at home after happy hour. I'm at the other bars. And then I'm at the neighborhood bars. And then I'm at the after hour joints. And then it's like, and then I'm out with people that I don't even know, telling them my whole life story as if I was doing a fifth step. And, like, we have so much, like, we have a hard time of doing that here, but we have no problem doing it out there in a bar. And, like, that's kind of, like, how I know now, going through this process and looking back at my drinking, that this, there's a, something in my mind that doesn't compute to the harm and the damage that I've done to myself from the previous weekend. A normal drinker does not need to tell themselves on Tuesday that they're not going to drink on Friday. And so, as this is going on, I meet this guy, and I get introduced to other forms of alcohol, and like, I remember this distinctly. Like, I was like 24 now, so like I was like that weekend drinker from 15 to 24, never missed a beat. And then, you know, I start drinking on a daily basis in 2004, August 2004, because is when I met this guy, and I never put alcohol down until I came into the rooms of AA. For 3 years, my disease really progressed heavily and heavily and heavily. And so, like, that's when, you know, I'm no longer showing up to family functions. Or if I am showing up, I got sunglasses on because I don't want you to see my eyes because I've been up all night. I am no longer paying, you know, my bills are no longer being paid. I'm hopping from job to job because my ego can't take being fired because I can't show up on time or I can't show up 5 days a week. My college was being paid for upfront cash, and I couldn't even manage to get my college degree because I was too busy meeting my bartender outside of school. I had all of these ideas of what I thought life was going to be, and yet my life was going the opposite direction, and my friends were going the other way, and I had no clue why. And it was embarrassing going to, because I became that, you know, that aunt that, like, showed up at family functions with the nice presents and this and that. And then all of a sudden I'm not showing up and I'm lying. I can't get out of bed and this and that. And it starts to become a miserable existence for me. Life becomes so hard to even get out of bed or to even speak words or even to pick up the phone or even to answer the phone because I'm embarrassed of what I did the night before or this or that. And I don't want to be around my friends anymore because I don't want to tell them what I was doing. So I'm hanging out with people that I never thought I'd hang out with. And so this drinking for 3 years, I threw my life into the toilet. Like, I needed a drink before I went to work. And then at lunchtime, I needed a drink. And then after work, I needed a drink. And so this had me in their grips at that moment. And that's what my life became. I became a prisoner to alcohol. And I didn't want to be, you know. And I didn't want to be late for work. I wanted to be a good employee, but I just needed the alcohol for me to even be present. I needed alcohol to go to work. I just couldn't, like, you know, get it going. And so when I ended up getting it. So, like, in 2007, I get evicted from my apartment. And I all this debt. Who needs Comcast, car insurance, whatever? You know what I mean? Like, they're taking way too much money from me. I need this money now because I'm now living. But my paycheck's gone in, like, a day or two. And I got to stop paying my bills, and that's what starts to happen. And I start to decline at the age of 24, 25. And so 2007, I get evicted from my apartment, and I had my phone's not ringing anymore. And, like, drinking was fun on the weekends. It really was. But I'm an alcoholic, and I have a disease, and it progressed. And it was no longer fun anymore, you know. So I get evicted, and who do we call? Mom. You know, alcoholism levels families. It really does. All that, like, my mom used to look, you know, she still does, but she's like, what happened? So I show up at her doorstep in 2007 with, like, no excuse of what happened. She's like, I'm like, oh, I'm bad with money. I'm, like, 40 pounds underweight at the time, and I have, like, nothing going on in my life. So a month after I move back into my mom's, I'm sleeping on a floor. Now all my outside things are now being taken away from me one by one. You know, I show up at a friend's mom's funeral, like, half lit in the ass, like, just, you know, making a fool out of myself, and car gets taken away. I can't even fathom going back into work anymore. I just leave this job because I can't show up anymore in the state that I'm in. It was either, because it was too difficult. Am I going to go get my alcohol, or am I going to go put gas in my car to get to work? The alcohol won. And I show up at my mom's house, and she's got, like, my sister who's also an alcoholic. I have two brothers who are alcoholic. And she's got, like, her babies in there. So, like, now all of a sudden, I invade mom's space. You know, because mom owes me because of how I was raised, you know. So now I'm under her roof, and now I'm causing chaos in there. My other brother, he ends up relapsing, and he moves back in, and we're causing a whole lot of chaos. And my sister's there. She's got twin boys, and, like, I would take my mom's car. I would throw these little boys in the car with me to get alcohol, even though I don't want to, putting their lives in danger, putting anyone's life when I would drive down 95 like a maniac because I need alcohol so quickly in danger. It doesn't even come to mind the lives that I put in danger when I drink. And so, you know, this program works without rehab, without detox, without recovery houses. I know that those are necessary for some people, but I came in here with nothing. Like, I detoxed hardcore. Like, I, no recovery house, no detox. Like, it's strictly the 12 steps in AA is how I've recovered. And that was my path. Like, in 2007 was my first AA meeting because I knew one guy that I drank with, and he was sober. And I called him up, and he took me to my very first meeting. And it was a gay and lesbian meeting night out in Philadelphia, and I chose that because I knew I would know nobody, And I didn't want anybody to see that I was going to AA. And the thing is like, I wasn't even talking to anybody. Like, I, you know, they probably would clap. My old friends would probably clap for me and say, yes, go get help, you know. You know, I've been kicked out of weddings. I've been asked by my girlfriend, we can't really have you in our wedding anymore. You know, look what you've done. I've caused chaos without even, like, realizing that I was causing chaos because I was in such delusional state. So my first meeting and you know what? My first meeting, I was still under the influence. I still needed something to like get me out of bed, you know, like within that like year and a half that I was living in my mom's roof, sleeping on the floor, every waking moment, as soon as my eyes popped open, I needed alcohol to even get me off the floor. I needed alcohol to go to the bathroom. I was at this point like wearing my jeans for 3 weeks. I can't brush my hair. I can't brush my teeth. Alcohol is so much more important than all those things. It doesn't matter. And so when I came to AA, I was under the influence that first night. And it was just really odd to me. I went to a couple meetings. I went to like two different meetings in Center City, Philadelphia, and I just didn't get it. But I do remember people were happy and smiling and talking about selfishness and drinking. I'm like, I ain't selfish. Oh man, God, we are so selfish. It's unreal how selfish we are. God, we need God. But, like, I remember people happy, and I remember them being young people, you know, because when you think of AA, you think of older people, you know, here, you know. But, like, well, like, anywhere, like, any time I've ever heard of AA, you just thought of, like, just not when I went to those meetings, I saw young people, and I saw them happy, and I was like, whoa, something's going on here, you know. And then here comes the part where I try and do it on my own. You know, so I'm now living under my mom's roof. My spirit is still sick. I still look gray. I'm still underweight. I still just, you know, can't get out of bed. And I'm not drinking. I'm not like, you know, I'm like really trying to stay sober for like 2 weeks at a time here and there. And it's only because I had no money and there was nothing left to steal. Otherwise, I would have been drinking. I just had no more game left. So then I was at home, and my mom had to look at her adult daughter, all sick, sleep until 3-4 in the afternoon. And this is when I say level families, like my need, like I interrupt a relationship between my mom and her granddaughter, because my brother and my sister-in-law, every time they come into my mother's house, I'm sleeping until 3-4 in the afternoon on the floor, and my brother and my sister-in-law don't want their kids to see that. My other brother, too, same thing. We're just like a mess in mom's house. And he's like, I can't bring my kids to go see grandmom. So they don't come around for a year. And it's all as a result of my drinking, my alcoholism, that I interrupted that bond between a grandmother and a granddaughter, because my mom now has to pick between her kid and her grandkids. And, God, my family's healing now after this process. And, So anyway, my mom, like, literally, she watched me, like, suffer, like, trying to will it. I'm like, I still look so sick, and I couldn't understand why, you know. And there came a point in time where I realized I couldn't do it by myself. It was 2008 in May. I was at a bridal shower. I was surrounded by women who loved me, my aunts, my cousins. It was just, you know. And so I remember, like, taking a drink. It was like a glass of wine, and then I'm like, oh, and then like I literally felt like that like surge of like I need more, you know, and I didn't know what that was, and immediately there I manipulate mom and then let me take her car. I steal $20 from her bag and off I went, and I realized, I'm like, well, I can't do this on my own. Why did I have to do that? Like, I don't want to take mom's car. I don't want to lie to her. I don't want to show up the next morning just a complete mess. I don't want to have to do all those things. But alcohol literally pulled me to do it. My body needs it. It makes me feel comfortable in this world. It makes me feel safe. It shuts my head up, you know. And I was already like, I'm just going to be an alcoholic for the rest of my life and live under mom's roof. Like, that's how I was thinking. I'm like, I guess this is going to be the rest of my life. Going to be 40, 50 years old, living on their mom's roof. Still that, like, daughter that's, like, half shot in the ass. Like, I was beginning to accept that that was how my life was going to be. And God, it's so much different now, man. So when that 2008 after that bridal shower was really when I came to, you know, I can't do it on my own. I need to go back to those meetings. And I went back to that same meeting, and I saw, and this is the importance of having a home group, because I saw the same women that were there the previous summer. I'm like, wow, there's got to be something going on here. You know, these women are still here, and my sponsor instills that in me, too. But always be present at your home group for that new person that comes in. They're always looking for that familiar face, even, you know, if it's a month from now, 2 months from now, a year from now. And that's what and that was my experience, because I ended up having this woman be my sponsor, and she still is today. And but the thing is this, she tells me, you got to get into the steps, you got to help others, you got to get a home group. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. I want to do all of those things. But I have no idea that my mind will keep me from doing those things. That's the craziness of this. Like, I have no idea that recovery at this time is supposed to be in my feet and not in my head. So I'm like, all those things sound great. I went through the steps. I'd show up at her house, and I would drink every 30 days. And I couldn't understand why. And so this went on for 10 months in AA of drinking every 30 days. I even began to make amends. And so I realized this. I was so afraid of going into my neighborhood AA because I didn't want people to see me. And little do I know, it's a place where I have so many spiritual experiences at today. And my sponsor said, you have to go into your neighborhood AA because you're afraid of it. And this is where my journey really began. Like, woo! It's wonderful. And I didn't know it then, you know. And so I just remembered my last drink, you know. My mom, I call her up because I missed work on a Friday. And this is, I also want to say this too. Like, I didn't start to get a job until I came into AA and I started to put this step work first. Because the spiritual malady must be cured first before we gain anything personally or materially. And I believe that to my heart's core. And when I came into AA and I started to take action, all of a sudden a job was placed in my path, and I still have the same job. And so like now I'm like calling out of work like every day, and I'm trying to hide. You know, like I didn't know what to do because I know like what happened at my last jobs. I just stopped showing up, and I'm like, what is going on here? I'm going to AA. I don't know why I keep drinking. So I remember I was at this meeting in my neighborhood, and I raised my hand, and I'm like, I have been here for 10 months. I have gone through the steps. I started to make amends, but I have one day sober. I'm missing something. And I heard this man say before, if you don't have the enthusiasm to carry this message, then you probably did miss something. And that was true for me anyway. Because I was just so baffled, I couldn't understand why everybody else was happy, joyous, and free. And I thank God that this woman was at this meeting at this time after I shared this, and she carried the message to me. And she said, she's like, well, alcoholism is an internal condition. I'm like, what? What do you mean? She's like, our bottles were but a symptom. Like, that's what we use to treat our alcoholism. That's what we use to make us feel safe in this world. She's like, do you just sit there in your chair, wonder, people are looking at you, people are staring at you, you can't get up, you can't do this, and you just become fearful? I'm like, yeah, how do you know? And she's like, I suffer from the same thing. I'm like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? She's like, that's alcoholic thinking. She's like, oh, my God, I've always had that. I'm like, oh, my God. And in that moment is when I realized that I am an alcoholic. And that was the date I surrendered. My sobriety date is my surrender date. And this woman kept me up till 2 a.m., And she walked me around, and her phone was ringing. She was doing 10 steps. She was like a walking woman in AA, like in action, you know. And we're like at like this, like, you know, some type of like festival down the street. And I'm just watching her like live life and be free. And I'm like answering the phone and talking about AA and this and that. And I missed all of that the whole 10 months that I was here. I didn't know that I was missing that. And so that same night, she took me to a rehab that she was speaking at, and I just listened, and I end up, like, seeing someone from my neighborhood there. I'm like, oh, my God, this is so cool, you know? And because I would hear people have these types of experiences, like, this happened, or this happened, or this happened, and I would sit in my chair and go, that ain't going to happen for me. Little do I know, I've had these experiences happening all the time because I'm willing to allow them to happen. I've surrendered to this program 100%. And I remember she kept me out, this woman, she kept me out to the, you know, that night, and I met her sponsor, and it was just like, she's like, you got to change your action. Whatever you were doing doesn't work for you. Because the day I met her, she's like, well, what are you doing today? I'm like, I'm going to go to this barbecue that these people are having. And she's like, no, you're not. She's like, your ego won't allow you to even be connected with those people. I'm like, what? I thought ego was a good thing, you know? No, it's a killer. Oh, God. Ego and pride. Oh, God, it's sickening how heavy they lay on top of you and you don't even know it. I lived. Ego and pride and alcohol is what kept me living through life, but yet I couldn't get life going. And I realized you come in here and you got to do the exact opposite. Your ego needs to be leveled. You got to let the pride go. And the crazy part is you don't even know that that's what's laying on top of you, and you can't let God in. And this woman called me the next morning. See, alcoholism for me will level me the very next day, because I had no friends at this point. I had no connections in AA. I was just so afraid to even, like, speak, share. I just couldn't. She's like, you're not even going to be able to anyway. Your ego, your self-centered fear has got you in prison. I got, makes so much sense. And so she called me the next day at like 2 in the afternoon. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm in bed. She's, because I couldn't get out of bed again. Like, I was leveled again by self-pity and didn't know that self-pity was keeping me in bed. And she's like, just get up and walk down my house. And I'm like, no. And she's like, no, just put your shoes on. She literally had to give me direction. Put your shoes on and just walk down my house. And I'm like, okay. And the most spiritual thing I ever said in this program was okay. And 3.5 years later, I still say, okay. I have to. I know that I will be blocked from God if I don't. And I went down to her house and I just sat there, and she was just going about her business. Her phone's ringing again, like sponsees and this and that. And I asked her, I'm like, well, why don't you be my sponsor? She's like, no. I'm like, why? And she's like, because it's not your sponsor, it's you. I'm like, oh. And thank God that she had, was able to say that she didn't have, this ego. Like, yeah, I'll sponsor you. Like, she wasn't a woman like that. And I watched her. And, like, she would go into her home group, and then that eventually became my home group in my neighborhood. And I'd watch her welcome everybody that came in the group, just like you guys did. And I just start doing it right behind her, Like, she didn't even know it. But, like, that's kind of like, I was just, like, moving my feet and not listening to my head. And I remember those people in my home group, they were like, count on my days. And at 90 days, they gave me the chair. And then after that, like, 4 months sober, I'm sponsoring. And I don't stop moving. And that's how I know that recovery works. Like, you just keep moving your feet. Experiences keep happening. I shared at my very first. This is how I knew I was awakened through this process. Like, this woman walked into the doors of this meeting, and she's someone that I would probably feel less than because she's cute. And she walked in, and I had this feeling of, holy shit. I did not judge her. I didn't feel less than, and I didn't feel better than. I felt a woman's equal for the first time in my life, and I've never experienced that before. I'm like, whoa, something has shifted, something has happened, and we became friends, and then she kept me moving, and then I started sponsoring, and then me and my sponsee are going around taking, like, commitments and this and that, and then, like, so now this fellowship's growing up around me because now I'm sponsoring, and my phone's ringing now. Oh, man, the phone rings, the text messages come. I had the same cell phone number for the past 3.5 years. I have the same address, I have the same job, but my experiences change, I can't, like, stress the importance of how vital it was for me to kind of, like, allow people to level my ego here. And continue to allow them to level my ego, because humility is what keeps me close to God today. The past 3 years, I've had so many different experiences, and just like random people that have been in my life. Like, AA is so huge. It has you don't even know whose lives it's working in as we sit here tonight. And this woman, I got a text message from this woman this past summer, the beginning of the summer, and she's like, "Hi, I'm Cass, and I'm 29 years sober, and will you come up and speak for me? You don't know me, but I know your brothers. They really helped me when I got sober." I'm like, "What?" And so I end up, you know, speaking to her, and she's like, "Yeah, when I first came into AA, I was so crazy." She's like, "I got into action, and I would take my nephews out, and I would take your brothers out with them." And I'm like, "Wow, that's amazing." Because as I am a little girl, like, we didn't have vacations. We didn't have this. My mom couldn't, like, take us to McDonald's or anything like that. We didn't have the money to. And, like, here we go. This woman in AA is now taking my brothers to, like, experience, like, camping trips and McDonald's runs with her nephews. I'm like, that's amazing. I didn't even know that AA was working in my family's life. You know, you never know whose lives you're touching through these principles that we walk today. And, you know, I guess, like, yeah, today, this is what my life is like today. My family's beginning to heal. Ooh, it gets me emotional when I talk about my family because my mom watched her. My mom basically runs a recovery house, but she doesn't know it. Because she's always like, you know, soothing one of her kids that are trying to come through this process, you know. And so I'm sober now, and then I'm at, like, so then I can bring spiritual principles to my mom. My mom's open to them, which is amazing. She loves recovery. She loves AA. I give her speaker CDs. She looks forward to getting these CDs because they're allowing her to heal. She's listening to these CDs, and she's going, "That's why my kids did that," you know. And so, plus Al-Anon speakers, too. They're amazing. There's a point to these speaker CDs. They're to get to people who can't get here. And so, like, this past summer, like, you know, when I remember when I was drinking, I would hear my, you know, like I said, my niece's voice. Like, "Why is Aunt Kathy always sleeping?" Her voice still sticks with me today when I was laid out on the floor and I was in my active alcoholism. And, you know, it broke my heart hearing her voice because I was the aunt that was able to take her to the mall and do this and do that. And I remember this past summer, like, me and my brother were able to buy, like, rent a shore house for the week. And I invited all my brothers and my nieces and nephews down. It was really nice. And there was no alcohol there. And it's not to say that it would have been a bad thing if it was there. My two brothers that drink, but they don't need to. They don't need to have alcohol when they go on vacation. Now, if it was me and my two brothers who were sober, we would need it if we weren't here. And the thing is this, it's like my nieces and nephews aren't going to, you know, grow up and go, "Yeah, well, our aunts and uncles were always heavy drinkers, blah, blah, blah." Like, well, I'm not transmitting that experience now. We're transmitting, "Yeah, Aunt Kathy and Uncle John and Uncle Chris, they went to the boardwalk with us. They took us on the rides. They watched the fireworks with us. We went on the beach." We, you know, those are the experiences that God allows me to transmit through this process. You know, when I'm invited to, like, come through this amends process, this 9-step amends, thank God, to clean up the wreckage of my past, because now I'm invited back into my brother's house and to sleep over there and just to be of service, you know. My little brother, how he got sober, how, you know, we say that this is attraction, not promotion. And me and my one brother are here in AA, and we're watching our youngest brother, like, his spirit. It's amazing when you see other people, their spirits just go dwindle and dwindle and dwindle until they're ready. And it was like my grandmother's funeral. My little brother didn't, you know, attend it. He was missing. He just sold his car for another drink. And this was last November. And then my brother John and I, he had this feeling. He's like, "I think I need to go look for Chris." And this is what happens with this step 11. When you sit in prayer and meditation, you get these intuitive thoughts. You get these intuitive feelings. And it was right when you learn to trust that through this process, through practice and practice and practice. And, like, I can't believe I'm watching this. You know, my brother goes and finds my little brother. And he brings them to, first he brings them to my oldest brother's house, who's just dry. He's like, "Oh, F him, screw him," blah, he wants to, like, beat him up. And my brother John's like, "No," you know, because there's a reason why we have this message. Like, there's a technique here in how you carry it, you know. You don't threaten violence. But so my brother John calls me. I'm like, "Just bring him here to my house." And it was just like, his spirit was dead, and he was just like this on the step, and he had nothing left in him. So we took him to detox. He goes through detox. He goes through rehab. He goes to self-help. He goes through all the levels of self-help, and he's sober 9-10 months now. And he's sponsoring, and he's sponsored, and like, I can't believe that this stuff is happening. Now, had we banged Big Book on, did this and that, because I actually did that to my oldest brother when I got this awakening. I went to my oldest brother, he had like 4 years sober dry. I'm like, but there's, you're selfish, and he's like, screw you, you know, and like, it was, don't do that. But, you know, and so I told my sponsor I did. She's like, yeah, I did the same thing to my sister. I'm like, oh. Because we just want everybody to get this. That's really it. There's good intentions, but there's a way to go about doing it. And it's cool because, like, when my brother was in self-help, my other brothers, we're having, like, a three-way call now. And we're talking about our God experiences. And I'm, like, blown away that this conversation's even happening. And my little brother's, like, thanking us. Thank you so much for helping me in my recovery. And we're, like, we didn't do anything. We just went with our God instincts and we showed up with how AA taught us. And so now we're learning now how to be brothers and sisters. I'm learning how to be a big sister and to support them in whatever it is they're doing. I'm learning how to talk to them with, you know, lovingly and an open heart and an open mind. And that's what AA has done for me. You know, I feel like I should be bringing this up. Like, something that, like, I just recently gone through a breakup in AA relationships. Always fun. But, like, I guess I want to share this is because we broke up lovingly. And I've never broken up lovingly with a boyfriend before. It was always someone cheated. Someone did this, someone did that, you know. And the reality is I had to get truthful with my spirit. I had to get true with my future ideals of what I want. And so did he. And it was really hard to split. But through prayer and through meditation, because you get those feelings like something's not right here. See, I want to live and do God's work. I totally do. I love it. It feels great. It's like the juice. Like, I want more of it, you know. And it's not to say that he doesn't. He does, too. But our future ideals don't line up, and we split up. And it's just, and if you're talking to women who have been through the same thing, who have guided me through this process, and allowing me to kind of, like, be true to myself. Like, what were my defects in that relationship? Because whatever it is, whatever I carry, whatever I don't let go, like I said, I love when women smash my ego because it gives me humility and it allows God to come through. Like, I have to be truthful. And if I don't, like, heal those areas now, I'm going to carry them over into the next relationship. And I don't want to do that. Like, I want to live God's will. And I know that God will put a person in my path who he wants me to be with. And I hear women say that, the women that direct me. I have wonderful, beautiful women in my life. And I look at them and go, wow, okay, that's what I want too. Because I know that God's will is better than mine. And the thing is like prayer and meditation. And so I know that this 12-step works. So I'm praying. I'm like, all right, God, now I'm root. You know, this is going on. Now I feel alone. Like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm not used to being alone. I always had a boyfriend. We always have somebody, you know, that codependency stuff. And, you know, the truth is when I'm with somebody, I forget myself. I forget, you know, I leave myself in the back burner because I'm a people pleaser. And the thing is I'm not growing along spiritual lines when I'm in that phase. And this process says spiritual progress, not perfection. And I want to progress. I really do. I don't want to go backwards. Just yesterday, like, I was able to sit in his presence and have breakfast with him after I was a bit, you know, like, you hear someone say something, you want to storm off, like, screw him, you know, like, he said one thing and I was like, this mother effer. So I walk out the door, I'm like, I ain't staying, as if I'm so important, you know? And so I begin to leave, and this woman comes out, and she's like, why are you leaving? What did he say? I'm like, well, he said, you know, he's in a band, and he wouldn't mind me sharing this, but he says, well, I'm in a band now as a girl singer, and I'm like, man, it's all he said, and I want to leave, and I want to be in self-pity under the blankets, and that is such a dangerous spot for us to be in, and I want to run from it, and if I ran from it, I would have been under the blankets, I would have been texting other dudes, I would have been on his Facebook, screw this, screw that, sending hate text messages, and I don't want to be that person, but that's the reality. And she says, no, you're not leaving. You're going to sit through this pain. And I had a choice to say, no, screw you, I'm leaving. But I said, no, I'm willing, so just lay it on me. And then, like, it all went away because I had to see the truth in myself. I had to see that my thinking will go to the negative immediately and it'll just make up shit. My thinking had these two people married with kids. You know, not even knowing this woman. I don't even stay in her. Like, I have to learn that we don't possess other people. I can't control their actions or their behaviors or what they say or what they post or what they send. It's none of my business what he does. It's none of my business. It's time to move on and heal. And, well, God is so good. But, I don't know. I have so much more to go. I have so many more fears. I have so many levels to peel away still, and I can't wait. I really can't. Like, because I know that when I walk through these fears, so many other doors open. So many other beautiful spiritual experiences are waiting to be experienced. You know, just like when I walked into that home group when I didn't want people to see me, when I was walking around with my baseball cap, wonderful things happened. I met women I never thought I'd be in relationships with. You know, I don't know if there's a girl here, Jill, I don't know if you're here, but this is what's cool. When I'm open to God, this guy got this text message last night, Kath, can I give your number to this girl? I'm like, of course. They usually don't call, though, you know, when they try to, but she called like 4:45, and I was talking to her, and she's not even, I don't even know if she's from around here or near here, and I'm like, well, I'm going to Quakertown tonight. She's like, no way, I'm like 20 minutes away from there. So maybe I'm here to just meet her tonight, who knows? But I hope someone got something from my message tonight. I mean, if you're suffering, please just ask someone for help and be willing to just let your ego be smashed and allow the humility to pour through. It's a wonderful existence. Thank you.